Hello, my name is Carla Astles. I'm an advanced nurse practitioner in primary care and one of the respiratory trainers at Education for Health. We have produced this podcast to support Fact Sheet 6, which is titled Hay Fever and COVID-19. Information and resources and references are correct at this time of recording, the 30th of May 2020. The learning outcomes of this podcast are to hopefully provide you with a pragmatic overview of managing a consultation on the assumption that physical examination of the oropharynx and nose or of your patient being face to face with you may not be possible. It's not a podcast on the pathophysiology of allergy or of COVID-19, but we are going to consider the similarities and differences of the presenting symptoms of allergic rhinitis, namely seasonal allergy in the form of hay fever and COVID-19. And your learning through this podcast is supported by Fact Sheet 6, and we'll also be referring to useful resources and signposting other areas that you may wish to use in consultation with your patient. So if we start defining what, in the context of this podcast, allergic rhinitis is. Allergic rhinitis is a result of an exaggerated immune response to an allergen. It can either be seasonal or perennial, and in this case we're actually concentrating on seasonal allergic rhinitis, which we commonly know as hay fever, and that's how I will refer to it as we continue through. Hay fever is an allergic response to pollen, which can be triggered by allergens in the air around us, such as grass, which is the most common, tree, plant or weed pollen, and some individuals are also allergic to mould. Over the symptomatic period of time, the individual that will experience hay fever can have it in a mild and possibly intermittent form, or it can be persistent and mild, moderate or severe through their allergy months. The definitions of what consists of mild, moderate or severe can be found in the NICE Clinical Knowledge Summaries resources, otherwise known as NICE CKS. You may have noted on your patient's record a history of allergy or hay fever recorded, and your patient may also reveal quite early on in the consultation that the symptoms they wish to discuss with you are the same or similar to symptoms that occur at around the same time each year or have occurred in the past, and this increases the probability that you're discussing seasonal allergic rhinitis or hay fever. I would say as a resource, it's quite useful to have access to a pollen calendar, which you can find on Allergy UK or off the Met Office, as you will find that your patient reports that it's between certain months of the year that these allergies or symptoms occur. And actually, it's useful for both you and them to know whether that may be more for future planning related to tree pollens or to grass pollens. Hay fever is very common in the UK and is becoming increasingly so. Up to about 40% of children and between 10 to 30% of adults will experience hay fever. And in the asthmatic population, around 80% of asthmatics have some form of allergic rhinitis. And when we look at actually just then the asthma prevalence in the UK, that's 1 in 11 children and 1 in 12 adults. In terms of the burden of these symptoms of hay fever and allergic rhinitis on our population, of those that suffer, up to 57% of adults and up to 88% of children with allergic rhinitis have sleep problems, leading to daytime fatigue and also decreased cognitive functioning. Allergic rhinitis and hay fever is a risk factor for asthma, and it can also precede asthma. We will talk a little bit more about the coding and recording of this consultation, and especially in its relation to the importance of asthma control as we go through this podcast. But for now, we'll just initially stop and consider history taking. History taking can facilitate a patient-centred consultation and a wonderful opportunity for shared decision making. You may find it useful to have a template or the resource such as Fact Sheet number 6 by your side to help guide your consultation. During this period of COVID-19, it is understandable that many of us have threads of anxiety or fear when we are becoming very aware of any emerging symptoms in our bodies. And it's important that we give our patients the time to express these concerns or these fears, as actually sometimes simply just saying them out aloud can help them move on and move forward and differentiate between signs and symptoms that in this case may be related more to hay fever than those that may be related to COVID-19. It's possible that as you start to code and record your consultation on your clinical system, that you'll be prompted to open up the suspected COVID-19 template because you're entering a symptom such as cough. However, you may want to consider whether it's appropriate to do that, depending on the context of the consultation at the time. But either way, you should continue to code each of the symptoms that your patient reports as individual entities rather than swathes of free typing. If your patient is already known to have asthma, please do include the coding of hay fever or seasonal allergy as a trigger. If you just type in the words asthma trigger, you should then be presented with an option of triggers that you can basically go through and include code by code as part of their asthma record. If your patient has reported to you that these symptoms have occurred in past years at similar time and you haven't noted a recode or SNOMED code already in place referring to seasonal allergies or hay fever, then again take the opportunity to code it at this time and perhaps even specify the months that they are usually symptomatic in. So where is there potential confusion between the two conditions? On the 18th of May 2020, the UK government added that loss or change to your sense of smell or taste, meaning that you've noticed you cannot smell or taste anything, or that things smell or taste different to normal, was added to the common symptoms on the NHS 11 site. Outside of COVID-19, these symptoms when reported are a known consequence in about 20% of cases of viral upper respiratory infection and in about 25% of cases of nasal and sinus conditions including hay fever. Following a rapid review of the published evidence on this symptom alone by the Centre of Evidence-Based Medicine, it was concluded that the published research on this symptom is of poor quality. However, real-life data shows it is reported frequently. The centre concludes that it is its relation to other symptoms that is critical in reducing false positive cases of COVID-19, which is why a good history taking is so important. As we move into the grass pollen allergy season in the UK, these and other symptoms which are common between hay fever and COVID-19 have the potential to raise public concern or confusion when differentiating between them. And this concern has been noted in the medical press and by the Royal College of General Practitioners. Using the BMJ best practice tool on COVID-19 symptoms and the CKS tool on hay fever, we're going to go through a checklist now, looking at the common and uncommon symptoms between the two conditions. It may feel like a slightly dry phase of the podcast, but we will summarise this into key messages at the end. The symptom of sneezing is common in allergic rhinitis and hay fever and uncommon in COVID-19. Nasal itching and nasal discharge bilaterally is common in allergic rhinitis and hay fever. And you may also see, if you're on video consultation, evidence of a nasal crease, and your patient may hold their hand up to their face, indicating facial discomfort or facial pain, which is, as I said, common in allergic rhinitis and hay fever, but is uncommon in COVID-19. There may also be accompanying nasal congestion and a postnasal drip, which is common in allergic rhinitis and hay fever and uncommon in COVID-19. So to sum that section up, nasal symptoms are very common in allergic rhinitis and hay fever and uncommon in COVID-19. With regards to eye symptoms, we commonly see them in allergic rhinitis and hay fever, and they may be reported as bilateral itching, redness and tearing, and they are uncommon in COVID-19. Some patients report itching of the palate or mouth in hay fever. This is occasional and won't be experienced by every person, and it is not reported in COVID-19. Ear symptoms, namely ear pain or deafness, is associated to eustachian tube dysfunction and effusion, commonly in children and often with allergic rhinitis and hay fever, but it is not reported in COVID-19. Absence of these symptoms, absence of ear symptoms, does not mean, though, that the child is not suffering from hay fever. Now we'll step into some of the more common symptoms between both conditions, namely cough. So cough is occasionally associated with allergic rhinitis and hay fever, and particularly where our patients have asthma, as it may indicate airway hypersensitivity. And cough is very common in COVID-19, and alone it cannot differentiate between the two symptoms, between the two conditions. Headache is occasionally reported in allergic rhinitis and hay fever, and often associated to the nasal congestion. And interestingly, it is uncommonly reported on the BMJ tool, though again we know from practical experience that many of our patients with coronavirus symptoms are reporting generalised pain, including headache. Fever, however, is one particular symptom which won't be present at the temperature reading of greater than 37.8 in allergic rhinitis and hay fever. And fever above 37.8 will be associated to an infectious cause. And that brings us back to the symptom of taste changes and smell changes, which we know are both common in allergic rhinitis and hay fever, and also in coronavirus. In summarising the differences between hay fever and coronavirus, runny nose and sneezing and or nasal congestion, especially with itchy eyes, is the key package of symptoms that you'll find associated to hay fever. Loss of smell and taste we've established are common across both conditions, but a fever greater than 37.8 will signify an infectious related cause. Over the next few minutes, we'll briefly review some of the non-pharmacological techniques and self-management strategies, as well as some of the pharmacological strategies for the management of hay fever. High pollen days are expected on warm, dry days. Rainfall early in the morning may keep that level lower for the day, and a run of cloudy days will often result in a slightly lower level of pollen, where a run of long, dry weather will increase it. The type of pollen that is being released disperses in different wind speeds. Some pollens need higher wind speeds, such as birch, and others circulate more in lower to moderate speeds. In a completely wind-free day, the pollen has little chance to lift off the ground, and likewise on a very windy day, it will be circulated too high to be of much concern. Wearing sunglasses to protect the eyes and using an anti-allergy balm or Vaseline at the entrance of the nose and near the corners of the eyes may help to catch some of that pollen, but please do point out to your patient they need to wipe that Vaseline away from the nasal entrance and away from the eyes when replacing it. Hanging washing out serves to catch the pollen, and quite simply you then bury your face in it if those are the sheets you climb into at the end of the day. So advise your patients not to hang their washing out on sunny days or days with a high pollen reading. Nasal rinsing and douching is known to benefit, and prescriptions are not needed to purchase the range of nasal rinsing or douching preparations that are available. There are some useful YouTube videos on how to manage nasal rinsing, and you can signpost these to your patients. Also showering at the end of the day, when you think of it as washing off any pollen that's landed on you, is also of benefit. Pollen rises and falls in response to heat. So with the rising heat of the morning, the pollen levels are higher, and with the cooling of the evening, the pollen levels return back to sort of human heights, and therefore it's another peak point of the day. So it's always good to keep the windows and doors shut at this time. The mainstay of treatment for hay fever, however, is pharmacological and includes oral antihistamines, nasal steroids and/or nasal antihistamines, which benefit both the eyes and the nose, and occasionally separate eye treatments are also needed. Because of the use of pharmacological treatments, it's very valuable to have a discussion with your patient around any health beliefs or concerns they have about using pharmacological preparations during COVID-19. If there are any concerns, it's more likely to be around the use of steroids, and you can reassure them that there is no evidence that the use of inhaled or nasal steroids will affect their body's ability to mount an immune response in the case of an infection. And finally, if your patient is known to have asthma, it's absolutely critical that both their allergies and their asthma are optimally treated and controlled. If during your consultation you have identified worsening asthma or uncontrolled allergies, please do inform the asthma nurse in your practice or the patient's GP, or refer your patient to their community pharmacist. The community pharmacists during this time are a really important part of our wider team, and no matter where you live in the UK, you are never more than 20 minutes away from one. Supporting individuals towards self-management is a very important way to conclude your consultation, and please do remember to signpost videos on Asthma UK for both inhaler technique and for the application of nasal steroids. Personally, I always send my patients a concluding text through Accurix with hyperlinks into the relevant videos and into the relevant resources that they may need. So that brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you for spending the time with me. Please do feedback any topics that you would like addressed in podcast to Education for Health. And I wish you all well. Take care. Bye-bye.